So we're trying to put some of the final touches on the mitzvah of Tefillas Kelim as part of our Kashra series. So you'll tell me by the end of the year whether the final touches are, or we may need next week to put some more of the final touches on the final touches. So we mentioned at the end of the year last week that it is critical who owns the Kelim in order for the mitzvah of Tefillas Kelim to apply. To such an extent that you have a very strange halach, it's almost like counterintuitive, that if a non-Jew still owns the Kelim, then there's no mitzvah of Tefillas Kelim. The mitzvah of Tefillas Kelim only begins on kelim that were owned or made by a non-Jew that have now been higil yad Yisrael, which is of the Jew. But if they still remain in the ownership of the non-Jew, so that's perfectly okay. There's no chiyuv, no mitzvah whatsoever to his kelim. It's for that reason that if you have a, let's say, a non-Jewish restaurant, a kosher non-Jewish restaurant, there's no mitzvah to tovel the kelim, there's no hiddur to tovel, nothing. The goy owns the kelim, he owns the kelim, finish, it's not mine. There's no mitzvah whatsoever. That's an explicit gemara at the end of Maseches Avodah Zarah. If you have a Jewish restaurant, that's a much more loaded question. The Pashup Shad is that you have to tovel the kelim if it's a Jewish restaurant. There is one opinion that maintains that maybe if it's a Jewish-owned restaurant, maybe there's no mitzvah tefillas kelim, because since the owner of the kelim is not really using the kelim, for him, though, it's what's called klei schora, they're business kelim. They're not edible, they're not for the purpose of eating. They're not called klei suda. That's a very, very shaky kula. There are certain hashgachas that rely on this kula still, but most of the hashgachas that we use don't rely on this kula. But the bottom line is, if the kelim still belong to the non-Jew, then everybody agrees that there's no mitzvah tefillas kelim. This is the background for what we mentioned at the end of the shiur last week, that the Rishonim told us that we have very, very unique situations where you can't do tefillas kelim, either because you forgot the Shabbos and Yontif, or because there's no mikvah in town, or as we spoke about 2 years ago when Nebuch, the people couldn't get out, and the kelims and the covids and quarantines and Maiselach. So the Rishonim quote that what can do is, under extenuating circumstances, is to actually be mocked with the kelim to a goy, and then borrow them back from the goy. Again, whether you should do this on a long-term basis or not, we've mentioned a little bit last week as well. But again, that's the basic tzur of the halacha, that kelim that are owned by a non-Jew, technically speaking, do not require a tefillas kelim. However, comes Tosfos on the spot in the end of Maseches Avodah Zarah and comments, what if the kelim are owned by a Jew? They're just owned by a different Jew. I mean, Reuven owns kelim, and Shimon wants to use the silverware that Reuven owns. Is that an obligation to tefillas kelim? So I could have argued that, well, it's not my kelim, it's not my chiyuv. So maybe the person who owns the kelim is not using it. The person who's using it doesn't own it. So maybe that's okay. Maybe everyone's good to go. So Tosfos quotes that that's not the case. Tosfos writes that Kol zman that the kelim are nischayvu b'yad Yisrael, because they're owned by a Jew, even though somebody who is not the owner per se is using them, that does pose a challenge. It is considered to be an issue of tefillas kelim. It's based on this, Shulchan Aruch quotes this, Tosfos l'Halach, it's based on this, that we run into a potential challenge if you're eating in somebody's house and you know that the kelim have not been tovel. So the truth is that Bizman HaZeh, this is becoming a less and less a common shayla. I'd say 50, 60 years ago, this was a very, very common shayla. When Tefillas Kelim just was not on a lot of people's radar. For some reason, there are a few mitzvahs here that got lost from Europe to America, and this is one of them, because some got lost in the shuffle. So many people just pushed it, they weren't aware of it, they didn't know the whole concept of Tefillas Kelim. That didn't really register with a lot of people. But there are otherwise people who are very familiar with Shomotar mitzvahs, the Kashra standards were up to par. Bizman HaZeh, anyone who's not toggling their kelim, you have to wonder as to what else is going on in the kitchen. Even people who are not so holding by a lot of other things, tefillas kelim is definitely a popular mitzvah Bizman HaZeh. But again, there is such a concept, you have such an idea that you have a person who basically is neman on the kashrus, but l'maisa, we know for a fact, well, we strongly suspect that they're not toveling kelim. This shayla comes up in a little bit of a different twist, Bizman HaZeh. It comes up very, very often with young men and women who are first becoming from, so they're first becoming Shor Torah mitzvahs. So it's usually one of the big challenges is to, if they're still living at home, to try to get their parents to turn over the kitchen, to make the kitchen into a kosher kitchen. Again, with all the challenges of somebody who's not from supervising a kosher kitchen, that's already a whole another challenge. Hopefully we'll talk about that. We talk about the world of Mashgichim and Erech Nebisura, and that'll be another subcategory in Hilchos Kashrus down the line at some point. But Lamaisi, you have a situation where the food that's coming in at least is kosher, and there are new pots and pans, but we didn't quite get to a kelim mikvah. Person's in the middle of nowhere, whatever, tachlis, the kelim haven't been toveled yet. So what's the status of eating in that house? Is what permitted to eat in that house? So according to the simple reading of Tosfos, that should be a problem. According to the simple reading of Shulchan Aruch, that should pose a very serious problem. If the camel owned by another Jew, even another Jew would not be permitted to eat there. However, there are a few possible kulas in the Shaila. So one was a suggestion of Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe said that it depends what kind of kelim we're talking about. So let's say, for example, you have a glass plate. So and your person's in the parents' house, the parents are not from yet, and everything is kosher, but not yet toivot. So your mother takes a piece of chicken, and she puts it onto the glass plate. So now she puts the chicken down in front of you. Is that called, I'm using the kli? I'm not using the kli. I don't need the plate. Please don't quote you. Don't tell your mother as I said this, but Migo, you can eat on the table. You could have theoretically eaten that piece of chicken on the table. So I'm not really using the plate. She just put it there, but it's not really my problem. So Ramosh says that would be okay. The only thing is Ramosh says that svara only makes sense for foods that don't really require kalim. So let's say Marshall, let's say you have a glass bowl or a glass. So yeah, she brings you a bowl of soup. So he got to be really good to do that. Okay, I'm not going to try that. It's going to be pretty handy in order to eat the bowl of soup without a bowl. So Ramesh says, even I'm going to agree that that's going to be a problem. Or Ramesh says, let's say he want to use silverware. So you can't say, Migo, I could use my fingers. I mean, it's true, you could directly use your fingers, but Lamaisa, you're using the silverware, you're picking up using the silverware. Ramesh set his svara by when the owner of the house pours the soup into the glass bowl for you. So I didn't ask her to put it into the bowl. So she put it into the bowl. So now it's sitting there. So the bowl soup is the other night, you're going to work. But she put it onto the plate. So I didn't ask her to put it on the plate. She put it on the plate. And I don't need the plate. But if I go ahead actively and pick up the silverware, so of course I'm using the silverware. So Ramesh's kula, it's good in lumdus, but the mice doesn't help for anything. Because the real problems are the silverware, and the problems are usually not even the plates altogether, because most of the plates are, who's serving on glass plates? Most of the things are Karel, China, whatever it is, things that we spoke about the best. So the China, Ramosh himself, doesn't have to be titled. Karel, Ramosh at one point definitely said that, and then there was a whole tumult what Ramosh did say, didn't say, whatever. Another story, not for now. So there were Gedolei Poskim who said, you don't have to title these things. So a lot of these things don't have to be titled altogether. So then the biggest problem is going to be the silverware and the glasses, and Ramosh's Shikotar is not going to help for that at all. So are there any other Tzadim Lahokil on this? So there was another suggestion that was made by a group of Poskim, that if you look at the original case of Tosfos was the ones with Mechadish, this idea that if a Jew owns a kli, so even another Jew is not allowed to use that kli. So Tosfos gave the example of somebody who's borrowing a kli. So I go to your house, I ask you, can I borrow you a set of silverware? So if I know that silverware weren't toivot, I shouldn't be using that silverware. So some poskim argued, but medevam amurim, that's true, if I'm literally borrowing it from you. So a borrower, shoel, is like a shtickle bailim, a shtickle owner on the item. And the Imamunas, he's chayv an onsin, if something happens to it, he's chayv to pay. So some posts can write that b'medivam amurim, that the non-owner has the toivel kelim, that's only if he's a shtickle owner, he's a something. He has the least responsibility, at least that's kabbalas achrayas, if the kelim would break. But if you're just a guest in somebody's house, or just a child in your parents' house, let's say, for example, you go to somebody's house for a meal and you break a glass, but they're going to take you to the Torah. I wouldn't go back to eat at such a house. They take it for the entire year. If the 15-year-old kid breaks his mother's glass by mistake, she's going to take him to court. Man, come on. So there's no relationship of a shoal there. That's just simply a guest bi'alma. So guest bi'alma was never included in this din that Taisa in the Shulchan Aruch writes. Some achareinim have that svar. So the minhag is to be pretty lenient on this when you have these extenuating kinds of circumstances. When you have, especially for these young balei tshuvas, so we usually tell them this psach, that when you get a chance, try to tevel the kelim. But until you tevel the kelim, so if it's not practical right now, you can still eat on the non. As long as everything is kosher, you can still eat on the non-tevel kelim. When people ask me, can I go to somebody's house, you know, for a meal, I know they don't tevel the kelim. So, you know, maybe 50 years ago, I would have said yes. I'm not sure what that means, Bizman Azeh. If a family doesn't keep Tefillas Kelim, Bizman Azeh, I'm not sure. There are a lot of other things that maybe not be up to par in terms of the kasher. So, I don't know. But Lu Yitzuya, it would be an old-timer kind of a thing. We know the person wasn't Tefillas Kelim. If it's a big Shasa Chak, so then one could probably rely on these things. Again, but the Yevid, the food is not treif anyway. Any food that was cooked in a non tevel pot, so the Ramah quotes from the Rishonim, is not treif. Bechlal, because lack of Tefillas Kelim has nothing to do with kashers. Why are we talking about the kashrus here? That's a kasher. But lemaisa is not kashrus per se, but it is kashrus. It's got snuck into your day at the beginning of Chalik into the sugars of kashrus, because it impacts what goes on in the kitchen. So now we have our kelim all ready to roll, all ready to be toivel them. So now we just have to make sure they're prepared properly to perform the mitzvah tefillas kelim correctly. So there is a big machlekes in the Rishonim at the end of Maseches Avodah Zarah about the Seid HaDvarim when a person buys kelim from a non-Jew. Mizman hazeh, this doesn't happen in the normal, in the old way. The old style was, I needed a pot, so I knocked at the non-Jewish neighbor and said, can I buy you, you have an extra pot, can I buy it from you? He said, sure. So he'd sell you a pot, and the pot had been cooked chazer and a velson trefus in it. So you had a kash of the pot, and you had also toivel the pot. Because man is there, most of us don't do that. Most of us buy, except in Washington Heights, as we spoke about last week, most of us buy new, fresh kelim. So we don't have to kash the kelim when you buy a new kli. But in the Aliyah too, that a person would have to kasher a kli and also toivel a kli. So the Lashon HaMishnah is that first you kasher it and then you toivel it. So the Rishonim had a machlokes, is that Lashon Dafka? Is that order the way Chazal presented? Is it specifically in that order? Or that was just the way Chazal was speaking? It's Lashon B'nei Adam, the kasher then toivel. But if you want to toivel, then kasher first. It's easier to toivel now and then kasher tomorrow. So there's nothing wrong with that. So that was a big machlokes of Rishonim. Some Rishonim say that that's a problem. The Rishbam, when the Balei Tosfos says that's a big problem. You can't reverse the order. Why can't you reverse the order? Because that's what's called a toivel of Asheretz B'Yadam. There's a din in Hilchas Tevilas Adam. It's a person's toiveling in the mikvah and they're holding on to a dead mouse at the time. So a great tevilah. They go to the mikvah, they come out, but as they come out, they're still tamei because they become a re-tamei again. So that's called the toivel of Asheretz B'Yadam. So such a tevilah does not work. The Rambam in Hilchas Tshuva, quoting the Gemara in Maseches Tikkun, we just had the film recently in Tainus. The Rambam in Hilchas Tshuva quotes that mashal and he says a person is chayzi b'tshuva, but they don't stop what they're doing. So they're the milling. And then in between the achets, they turn to their friend and say, the chazan's off key, and the rabbi gave a terrible drasha the last night back on the dray, and all the lashon hara, and the guy with the gabbai don't know what they're doing, and all the lashon hara that he, and why am I sitting next to the guy who's davening too loud, and the guy in charge of the air conditioning and didn't know what he's doing, and everyone's complaining. So the rabbi writes, that's called time of Shem's B'yaday. As you're trying to be chayz b'tshuva, you're being invited, being chayte. So that's a problem. So the Rishbam writes that if a person toivels a kli that's treif, that's like a shtickle toivel v'sheretz b'yadam. So many of the Rishonim question that and say toivel v'sheretz b'yadam. As I've said, this is not too v'tara b'chlal. The whole sugya doesn't make any sense. The whole application is not correct. So this is 2 days in the Rishonim. Whether you're allowed a toivel kelim while the kelim is still technically treif. So the day the Behuda has a tshuva where he has a little bit of a compromise view. The Behuda writes, it's a throwback to what we've spoken a little bit about in the past. There's a notion of what's called the kli ben yomo and a kli she'ena ben yomo. The Gemara at the very end of Maseches Avodah Zarah tells us that min haTorah, you really only have to kasha kelim if they were used with treifus within the last 24 hours. Because any time, any taste that's inside the walls of the kli for more than 24 hours is already turning rotten. It's already turning terrible, terrible tasting. And it is in the category of what's called the Nisim Tam of Gam. Whenever you have a Tam, it doesn't taste very good, so it doesn't pose any problems, lahalocha, at least min haTorah. So that's what the Gemara has, the famous question, the end of Maseches Avodah Zarah, Im Kain, why do we kash kelim for? What are we wasting time kashing kelim? Just wait 24 hours, put it aside. Every time you treif up a pot, just put it aside and just wait. So the Gemara says, no, Gezeira Kli She'ena Ben Yomo Atu Kli Ben Yomo. Chazal were afraid that if they let people just not kash a kelim, just wait it out 24 hours, so next time you're going to wait 23 hours. Next time you're going to wait 20 hours. You're going to shave away from the 24 hours. And that's going to be a problem in HaTorah. So therefore, in the Rabbanim, they said across the board, you can't rely on this school anymore. There was a Machlekes and Rishonim, when Chazal made this Gezerah. It's the very end of Maseches Avodah Zarah. When Chazal made this Gezerah, that you're not allowed to just stop wait out 24 hours. You have to Mamish Kasher. Was that Gezerah only made on Treifa Kalim? What about on Fleshik Kalim? Let's say it's not a Dovashal Treif. I just want to use a Fleshik pot to cook my milchiks in it. So the Ra'ah was a Talmud in the Mubuk of the Ramban. They used to think he wrote the Sefer Chinuch, and they realized he didn't. He was a Rabbi Mufak of the Ritva. So the Ra'ah, Rav Halevi, claimed that Gezerah, the Rabbanon, that you can't just take a chazah pot and put it aside for 24 hours. That gezeirah was never made on fleishik to milchik to fleishik. That was only made on dvarm shel iser. Dvarm shel hatar, yitach, I can't wait. If you have a fleishik pot and you want to cook your milk and cereal, whatever it is, tomorrow morning, so no problem. Just make sure 24 hours have waited since you used it for cholim. You can take a cholim pot. So when did you take the food out of your cholim pot? Yesterday at 11 o'clock. So you take it out, you put it aside. By 2 o'clock today, you can cook up your macaroni and cheese in the cholim pot. And then you just wait till tomorrow, and tomorrow night you can still cook up your chicken soup again. So the Ra'ah says you don't need two sets of pots. As long as you're careful to wait 24 hours, you don't need two sets of silverware or anything. Just save a lot of money. So with Shulchan Aruch, we don't pass like that. So the other Rishonim say that we don't follow that view. I remember a few years ago there was one of these surveys out about trying to map how religious observance American Jewry is at this point. So they asked like these really, really important questions like who lights Chanukah candles, like the real up there on the top. They asked a few other important ones, who fasts in Yom Kippur, who goes to Pesach Seder, etc. So one of the questions on the list was whether you have two sets of dishes or not. So it's not fair because they're all through the survey off because he said he doesn't have two sets of dishes. They all didn't have, he only had one set of dishes. Halavai, Mishav Ezech, if all American Jewry was all Ra'ahs, we would have been, Gula would have come a long time ago. But Minat Torah, there is such a chiluk, and therefore there is a chiluk with the Rabbanon also with the Evid. Let's say a person had a pot that was chaz was cooked in more than 24 hours ago, so with the Evid, if you cook kosher food in it, and the norm, let's have a chorif, this can change things a little bit, but normally it's not going to trafe up the resulting food. So the Behuda writes that you see from here that a pot after 24 hours is not really trafe anymore. There's an issa derabon, a gezeira derabon, not to use it, but it's not a trefa pot anymore, and therefore it's not a sheretz anymore. So if you, let's say you have trefa silverware, trefa pots, and you want to toivel them, you don't have time to be kash them yet. You have to wait till Erev Pesach to kash them. It's too hard for you to do it. You can wait till I do it for the shul for you. But you want to make bring them to the mikveh today. So the Rebbe says, no problem. Even according to the Machmirim, as long as you wait 24 hours, so then they're not really trefa anymore. They're also to use, but they're abundant as a gezeira, lest you come to make a mistake in terms of calculating the hours, but in terms of atreifas, they're not really considered to be atreifa pot. That's the chiddush of the Nebuta Bedasa Machmirim. According to the Mekilim, you could mamash use a literally atreifa pot within 24 hours. So the Rav disagreed with that, the cool of the Nebuta. The Rav talks about brisk of art, that din de Rabbanon, that you're not allowed to use a kli after 24 hours, is not an isagavra, it's an isachevza. It means, but the Rabbanon, they declare this to be atreifa pot. That's alam de shashayla. What's the nature of that gezeira? Is that just a gezeira b'alma? Just don't do it because you're going to make a mistake. Or midrabanan, they extended the definition of a treif about them. It's midrabanan, now it's treif li'olam void until it's kashin. So the Rav said, out of the love of the Rabbanan, it's still called the type of a sharaz b'yadav, that would still be a problem. Again, for us, this is very, very a rare shayla because we're usually not buying pots directly from the goyim. But in the olden days, when they would buy pots and pans and silverware directly from the goyim, so then in Shulchan Aruch it says, it's a machlok, it's a rishon, whether you could switch the order, the Rebbe was makel, and not everyone agreed to that clue. So now, more important for us, we come to a kli, we have a kli, we're all ready to tevel the kli. So there are a few things we have to be aware of before we actually tevel it. So one of the dinim that's not unique to Tevilas Kelim, it permeates all of Hilchos Tevilas B'mikvah, and that was the dinim of Chatzitza, that whenever you tevel anything, either a person or a kli, you have to make sure that it's clear of Chatzitza. So what exactly constitutes Chatzitza? We spoke about this many times. The Gemara says that Chatzitza and Halacha Moshe Mesinai, the two halachas that govern Hilchos Chatzitza were given to us at Moshe Rabbeinu and Sinai. One of them is that it's only called a chatzitza if it's on rov adover. So let's say rov of a person or rov of the kli. So if I have a pot and most of the pot is covered with dirt or something, that could potentially be a chatzitza. If number two, it's a dover hamakbid, it's something that I care about, something that I want to take off. If it has both of those conditions, then that poses the problem of a real chatzitza min haTorah, both for other men for kelim. And if it has only one of those two conditions, then it poses a problem in the Rabban. Chazal made a gezeira that if it's either rov or it's a davar makbid, that would be a problem. If it's neither of those two, so then it's okay. Then it's mutar ibn l'chachila, mikra din yiketoyvel. The Ramah quotes in Hilchos Nida that we have a minig when a woman goes to the mikvah that we don't want to take any chances, so we don't go with that cavalier attitude. Oh, it's a mil shen makbid, no big deal. Why bother cleaning it off? Just going anyway. So we say, no, l'chachila should try to take off everything. But with the Yevid, we do rely on that. A woman already rented a mikvah. She already came out already. She's ready getting dressed. She's ready out the door. And now she realizes that she left some mash of a speck of a nail polish or something. That so when I get the frantic calls from the mikvah, so the question I always ask is, do you care about it? Would you, if you were running to a wedding, would you run right away and quickly go remove that nail polish? It's clear, so it's clear now, you don't get to see it anyway. So when the answer 99 out of 100 times is, I couldn't care less about it. If you don't care about it, it's a meal, so it's a meal chen amach, but most people don't care about it, so then l'chadchili, you should have taken it off. I don't talk about that. L'chadchili, you should have taken it off. But yeah, but it's, the tefillah is still is perfectly acceptable. So with tefillas kelim also, we go with the same idea, that if it's a very, very small amount, and it's and it's nobody that can kill us about it anyways, that wouldn't pose a problem. That's what the Igra Din is. A lot of the stickers that we, you know, people spend 20 minutes trying to rub off the stickers in the Kelim Mikvah, it depends what kind of stickers they are. Some stickers, nobody ever takes off. A lot of stickers on the bottom of certain things, nobody ever, fakets, we like the stickers, it shows how expensive the kli was. So if you have a sticker that nobody removes, and not you, and not anybody else removes, so that it's a miyoshet ha-makbid, so the migra din, it's really okay. The problem is sometimes people cause themselves more trouble. They start scraping it off, and they don't do a good job. Now, the way it looks messy, so you wouldn't leave it that way. So now that you just created a chatzitza problem. So, again, it depends what it is. If it's a kind of a sticker that nobody removes, you don't care about, nobody cares about, it's a miyoshet ha-makbid, so migra din, it's okay. If it's a kind of a sticker that people do tend to remove, so that would be a problem. Let's say the kli is dirty. So usually at kelim, we talk about kelim, you know, they're usually fresh, brand new, right out of the box. But sometimes you tovel and kelim, sometimes by mistake a person used the kli, they forgot to tovel and they realize that it's stuck a little bit dirty. So sometimes you have a situation where there's dirt on the kli, there's gook on the kli. So then you have to ask yourself that same question. Is it something that's a davar ha-makbid or not? So how do you define what's called a davar ha-makbid? So there's a machlekes rishonim. Some rishonim say it goes both of the tovel, whatever the tovel himself thinks. And other Rishonim say, no, it goes Masa Yayla, whatever the normal people consider to be a Davar Machbid. So in Shulchan Aruch, we pass it both. We pass it, either one is considered to be a Davar Machbid. That if you personally are upset about it, or most people are upset about it, how do you mishar most people? Most males, most females, they may have slightly different standards of cleanliness in terms of... I told my kids that my wife's coming back tomorrow morning. I said, there's some serious work going on in the house. So, it's pretty messy, so then it's pretty dirty, so then we assume that's considered to be a davar ha-makbid, and that would pose a problem.
What if the kli has multiple parts, and one part doesn't need tefillah, like the rubber handle?
If it was all connected, I think it was all part of the same thing, so then you have to... If it's the kind of thing that always comes on and off all the time, so then you can take it off any time, but if it's something that's mamish used together with the kli all the time, I think it has to be tefillah.
But that would also have to go...
I think so. Big chatzitza problem that always comes up when you talk about kelim, it's the Mishnah, the end of Maseches Mikvos, is that you're holding on to the kli. The part that you're holding on to, so you stick it into the mikvah, so that's already considered to be a chatzitza. So one easy solution would be if you have a basket. So if you put the kelim inside the basket, so then assuming that the water gets all around the basket, so that would be okay. We need to put the kelim into a basket. The basket's not part of the mikvah. So you have to make the basket in such a way that it becomes mechubar to the meha mikvah. So the general way that we do this is, based on the Mishnah Maseches Mikvos, you have a basket with a lot of holes, so it can't hold any water anyway, so any water that's inside the basket is all mechubah to the Meha Mikvah. So that's what a lot of people like to do. The problem is that some of the baskets have slats in the bottom, so a lot of spoons end up sliding to the bottom. The Kelim Mikvah here is not so deep. It's not so terrible. I mean, you could theoretically reach down. In case of good and wet, you could reach down. Some Kelim Mikvahs, anyone remember the old Kelim Mikvah broyers? The old one. Remember the old, not the new one for the last 30 years. The old one in the bottom of 90 Bennett. Remember that one? So okay, so that one, I can tell you like this. There's probably still a spoon there that I dropped. It was about 12 feet deep. It was really really. You couldn't see to the bottom. So one time I lost a spoon. Anyway, so. If you don't have these kinds of setups and you want to tovel the kli by holding onto the kli itself, so you have to be careful with those chatzitzas. If you want to use a basket, also you have to be careful with chatzitzas. Sometimes you see a person comes to the kelim mikvah and they throw 100 pieces of silverware into the basket. And they just dump the basket in. Some of the kelim are being chatzitzas on each other. Some of the kelim are preventing the water from coming down to each other. So it's not, you have to be careful even when you use the baskets. But if you want to use your hands, so then holding onto the kli itself is a potential problem. So the Mishnayos in the end of Maseches Mikvos give us two different eitzes for that. So one suggestion that Tanaim give is you hold it loosely. So if you hold it loose, any water gets in between, and that would be okay. That's the din even by Tefillas Adam. That's the Gemara says in the second Berachah Maseches Beitzah. But technically speaking, a person could tovel with clothing on it. The clothing is very, very loose. The water just goes right under the T-shirt. So technically speaking, that would be it. We're not recommending it, but technically speaking, the tefillah would work with very loose. So over here, if you're holding onto the kli very loose, so some of the water slides on between your hands and the kli, so technically speaking, that would be okay. The only thing is that there are some Tanoim who seem to disagree. Some Tanoim disagree with that and say that it's a bad eitzah to do that, because If you're telling you to hold it loose, the guy's going to be nervous. He's going to hold it tight. He doesn't want to drop it 10 feet under the water. So maybe that's not the best etzah. So the Gemara, the Mishnah gives another etzah. The Mishnah says if you wet your hand first, so then everything is okay. Why? Because if you wet your hand first, so then all the water that's on your hand is basically mikvah water. So when your kli is going under the mikvah, so whatever part is connecting to your hand is still the ma'aseh being touched by the mikvah water, and that would be okay. So that's what it says b'feresh in the Mishnah. It says that in Shulchan Aruch. So the poskim have a big problem with that. How exactly does that work? That the water that's on my hand is mikvah water, really? When I close my hand, it's in the mikvah, it's mikvah water. But if I stick my hand into the mikvah first, I get my hand good and wet, and now I pick up a fork, you know, holding on to the fork for dear life. So that water, once it came out of the mikvah, it's no longer mechubah to the mikvah. So it just lost its status in mikvah water. So how does it help that I'm holding onto the fork tightly and I'm putting my hand back into the mikvah? How is that water that's stuck, which is clearly not connected to the mikvah water, how does that become hocus pocus mikvah water to solve the chatzitza problem? So we're not quite sure how that works. So Rabbi Yonatan Eibishitz had a famous chumra where he said, taka doesn't work. When you read the Mishnah, it sounds like it works. Shulchan Aruch sounds like it works, no one understands why. So Rabbi Yonatan Eibishitz says, no, everyone misunderstood what the Mishnah is talking about. The Mishnah didn't mean that you're going to take your hand out of the, you're going to first make your hand wet, then take it out, hold the fork. What the Mishnah means is like this, you're going to put your hand into the water and keep your hand in the water, and then you're going to take your hand from outside and transfer it to your hand inside the water. That's okay. So you can hold on to it tightly when it's inside the water because your hand never left the mikvah. So the water never became misulak, it became disconnected from the meh mikvah. But if you take your hand out, so that's going to be a problem. So some people are wondering, you never heard of that one. Never did that. If you did it the regular, normal way, the way it says in the Mishnah, it says in the Shulchan Aruch, it's okay. How that trick works, we're not exactly sure, but the Mishnah says that it works. So the bottom line is, the poskim say that the Mikra Din, as long as your hand was wet from beforehand, so it's okay. But there are some who prefer to do it Rabbi Yosef Eibishitz's way. So what I usually do is, when I'm Tovel Kalim, so usually I'll have a fork to be Tovel, so I'll wet my hand first, and I'll do it the old style way. I'll take the fork, put it in, but I'll keep one hand under the water, and I'll quickly throw a hand off under the water. Just make sure that you don't drop it. And then it takes twice as long. You have to hand off, put it on the side, and, you know, you get it down pat when you, after a few times practicing. It's not that, if even I can do it, it's not so complicated. So again, those who are chashish for that, those who don't want to be worried in this whole thing, so use a basket. So if they dump one thing in at a time into the basket, that's for sure going to be good. If you take 100 forks and throw them at the same time, then maybe you could run into a chatzitza problem. So any of the above are probably going to do the trick. So okay, so we're all ready to roll. So we have our kalim all cleaned. We have a kalim all kashered. We have a kalim all ready to roll. We solve all the chasita problems. We have to make sure that the body of water that we're using is actually kosher for tefillas kalim. So it's not too hard to do that as long as it's a kosher mikvah. So when I say a kosher mikvah, I mean that a kosher for the standards of women. It cannot be what's colloquially called a men's mikvah. A men's mikvah sometimes is a kosher mikvah, but sometimes not. So there are men's mikvahs around that are basically giant bathtubs, which are okay for tefillas adam, for minhagim, for tefillas ezras, and for Arab Shabbases, and all those kind of stuff. So those kind of mikvahs are okay, but they're not deraisadik mikvahs. And since they're not deraisadik mikvahs, so then they cannot be used for tefillas kelim. So if you just see a place that's advertised as a men's mikvah, don't assume that you can bring kelim there. You have to first then figure out, is it a kosher mikvah, the whole dini ha-mikvah, or is it just an oversized bathtub? If one wants to tovel kelim in natural bodies of water, this is part of our general issues we spoke about many times. You have to always be careful about this also. You can't just take the attitude, well, it's a big pool of water outside, so I can tovel it. Not so simple. It has to be a kosher body of water. So you can tovel things in the ocean. That would be okay. I strongly do not at all recommend tefillas adam in the ocean. Just not because it doesn't work. It does work, but there are huge obstacles to overcome. Hain in tam halacha, hain in tam safety. That when a woman finds herself, you get the shaylas often when, you know, when people are on vacation and there's no one near mikvah and they want to use the ocean for tefillah. So there are the most important consideration is safety consideration, because it's nice, you're not supposed to go to the mikvah in the daytime, so she's going to go at night. At night in the ocean, you'd be surprised how dangerous it gets very, 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 very quickly. So, to send the person to the mikvah, there's no, instead of the ocean, and dark, and there's no lifeguard. This is not a recipe for anything good. So therefore, I strongly discourage the using of the ocean for tefillas adam, for a variety of other halachic reasons as well. But in terms of tefillas kelim, so it's a safe place to be. So if it's totally safe, then you can just tefill the kelim in the ocean. One has to be careful before tefillin kelim in rivers and lakes and the above. Rivers are a big, big question. It's a whole sugya, a complicated sugya in the Gemara about rivers, whether it's the wintertime and the summertime, whether there's a lot of melted snow and a lot of rain. Is it too much rainwater, more spring water? It gets very complicated. I remember this was an issue at the beginning of COVID. Some people wanted to go run for Pesach, so they wanted to go run to the Hackensack River to start tefilling the stuff that they bought for Pesach. So I strongly discourage that on two grounds. First of all, it's a big machlokes where the Hackensack River is even kosher for tefillah altogether, because it's a bit of time and others, depending on how much rainwater there is in it or not. And then the other issue was that I just didn't feel that that was the right thing to do, to have people starting to it's a little tashlich in 2 weeks before Pesach, when I said no doubt that that the police are going to find out about it. And I said I felt it was a big chil Hashem. We're going to go send EMS services. We're trying to make sense of COVID and send them to go supervise tefillas kelims on the river. I said I just felt it was not the right message to be sending to the world. So I told everybody they should rely on some of the other coolers that we had. I didn't think the Hackensack River was good for many grounds. But anytime you do want to use any body of water, you have to figure it out. Lakes are not necessarily okay. Many of them are okay. But again, it's complicated to figure out which are good and which are no good. I remember somebody once called me from they're on vacation. And they called me, they forgot to toivel the grill. And not a disposable, it's a real grill. They forgot to toivel the thing for the grill. So they asked me, do I know where the closest kelim mikveh is? So I asked them, where are you? So they said, well, Mamash in the middle of nowhere. We're having this barbecue on the beach. I said, turn around. 50 feet into the water. I said, Kadosh Baruch created the biggest kelim mikveh in the world for you. And, you know, the guy's looking for North Carolina. He's looking for a kelim mikveh for something. Okay, anyway, so we have our kelim, we have our body of water, it's clean, everything's good to go, it's kasher, we're ready to roll. One last thing we have to do is make sure to make a bracha. It's a mitzvah, so you have to make a bracha. So whether it's a mitzvah deraisa, a mitzvah derabanan, I think we make brachas in the Neir Chanuk also these days. Hechon Sivan, a little salsa, so no matter what it is, kalas has to be tevel with a bracha. A lot of people make that mistake. If it's not sure whether it has to be tevel, then you don't make a bracha. But if it's 100% glass, you know, I don't mean 100%, if it's a glass clay, so then it has to be tevel with a bracha, with the rabbanan. If it's a metal clay, either the rice or the rabbanan, it has to be tevel with the bracha. So one recites the bracha, like all the mitzvahs, over the yasun, before you tevel it. What if a person only has one clay, they tevel it already, and then they forgot to make the bracha? So if they took the clay out of the water already, so then it's a rishonim, so we're chashish, that's too late. Once the mitzvah is over, it's too late. If they remember when the clay's still in the water, so that's a sofik in the folks, because the Mishnah has a tzat to say, closed by it hasn't come out yet, so then maybe you can make a bracha. So I don't know. Try to remember to make the bracha before your tevel the kelim. There are different practices about saying whether you say Atulas Kelim or Atulas Keli. It's one Kli. So whatever it says in the Kelim, usually has a parenthesis in the Kelim. So whatever your minute is, you could say in terms of that. If for whatever reason one has a Kli that you're not sure whether it has to be Tevel, so we mentioned in the past, so you should still Tevel it, but you don't make a bracha. If Lechet Chilim, you have another Kli available to Tevel together with it, so that would be a wonderful thing. Once one recites the bracha Atulas Kelim, one is really supposed to be quiet until one finishes Teveling with the Kelim. Because there's a shayla in Rishonim whether you may have to make another bracha. So the Rishonim discuss a person shechting 20 chickens, so you make one bracha, that bracha is chal on everything. If you talk in the middle, that's a shayla, maybe you have to make another bracha. But the Eved would pass, you wouldn't have to. But look, you're not supposed to talk, unless it's been Yoni Tvila. So let's say your wife's trying to help you unpack the stuff, so you can say, you know, give me this, give me that, you know, take off the sticker, that kind of stuff. That's okay. But just time to shmooze in between Tvila's Kalim, so that's a problem. End of the story. I've told the story in the past that right after we got married, so it was my wife, myself, and Rabbi Rapp and his wife. So we lived in the same building. We had just gotten married around close to each other. So we all had loads and loads of boxes of kelim to tevel. We were the one who was not going to have a car. So we had one afternoon, we had a whole trip down to the Broyes kelim, the new Broyes kelim, the new 35 years old, not the 60 year old, the new one wanted to do. And we were tevelling right enough. So we have, as it was 2-3 hours of tefillas kelim. So as soon as we started, so me and Rabbi Rapp weren't talking at all. So my wives were chatting and talking, and they couldn't say why. We forgot to tell them that you're not supposed to talk until you finish all the tefillas kelim. So they thought we were just not friendly. We were very, very friendly. We just 2 hours later, we told them that you can't. So I remember remember, I think it was right before we put up all the mezuzahs in the house. So the same thing, but you put up a lot of mezuzahs, you're not supposed to talk. So then I read it, my wife already chapped, she already figured that I'm not friendly for an hour and a half. It just, the din is that you're not supposed to talk until you finish doing all the mezuzahs. Okay, we'll stop.